Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. And in the studio today, I've got a great buddy of mine, Zach Gellerand Rubin of many things. Dude, this guy is everywhere. You work at a couple of the best bars in town. You work at Attaboy and at Dutch Kills, which are definitely two of my favorites. I typically see you very late night at Attaboy.
Happened a couple times.
Yeah, and then you're the operating partner of Hundredweight, which is an amazing ice company based also out of Long Island City, where Dutch Kills is, correct?
And, yes, sir.
Yeah. And you guys basically just... You guys kind of like really like pushed the cocktail just scene here like light years ahead of time by providing all these really, really amazing just access to amazing ice. You know, you guys are using these amazing like giant Kleinbell freezers, and it's not just that. You guys are like, I probably owe you some money from sometimes.
Yeah, man, actually. Sometimes.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I think it was like 20 bucks or something.
Okay, cool.
You can pay me after the show.
All right, cool. I'll buy you a pizza. So, this was built out of necessity because there was no good ice company that was focused on cocktails, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we really just, in the right place at the right time with the right idea to sort of make something happen that was ready to happen. You know, I saw the trend going in that direction, and so we just struck while the iron was, well, cold, I guess.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, it's been, gosh, that was almost 4 years ago. It'll be 4 years in March. We launched out in 2011, and it's been a crazy ride. But I think, I think we definitely changed the way that people make and drink their cocktails and their spirits. I'm pretty proud of the work that we've done. And there's been a bunch of other ice companies like mine that have popped up in other cities since then. So it's cool that we've sort of sparked like a more nation or even worldwide movement.
Yeah, there's a couple of guys, and I was just in D.C. this last week, and there's a couple of guys there who were essentially kind of like, they're like, the Hundredweight of DC, you know.
Yeah, I heard that there was one going on down there.
Yeah, yeah, and they, it seems like it was bound to happen anyway. You know, like you guys started this awesome ice company. People were like, "Oh shit! Well, we need that too." You know, like in other towns.
Yeah,
because I mean, like you guys. I mean, even though Philly and DC and Boston they're close, it's not like you can really deliver there, right?
Not the way we are. No. Not right now. I mean, you know, we have dreams of world domination, but for the time being, we basically contain ourselves to the five boroughs, although we don't get very many orders to the Bronx or Staten Island, and or even Queens, for that matter, where we're based.
Yeah.
You know, we've occasionally gone out to Jersey or up to Westchester County if it's, like, a large enough order to warrant the drive. But... Yeah, it's cool. Like I said before, I think it was sort of like an organic process. You know, it's like that thing that some theory in science. I don't know about these science theories about how there's like something in the air and a bunch of people discover it all at once. And, you know, well, and my partner and friend and boss and mentor, Richard Boccato, is sort of one of the last in a long line of people who had been making contributions to push the ice, the quality of the ice that we were using in our drinks to like a higher level. You know, and he came out of the whole Milk and Honey and Little Branch family where they were really doing new things that nobody else had really thought to do yet. And when he opened Dutch Kills, and hired me, back in, May of 2009, he was really looking for a higher level of ice. And we started buying these ice blocks from a sculptor in the neighborhood, Okamoto Studios. And cutting all the ice by hand. And then the birth of 100 Way really came out of Weather Up in Tribeca, actually. I was asked by Richie to join the team there and sort of help him as a right hand to open that bar. And it was there that he, as far as the record can show, that was the first bar in the world to purchase and own its own Kleinbell machine that was making these huge blocks of ice. And I was a part of setting that all up and, you know, figuring out how to do the ice program inside the bar, and then hearing everybody raving about it and talking about it, and, you know, bar owners and restaurant owners coming up to me and asking me, hey, where do you get this? Like, well, you know, we make it here. Well, where can we get it? And that's your classic entrepreneurial light bulb moment. Yeah. You know what I mean? Demand and then supply. So we did it.
Cool.
And it's been pretty cool. Yeah.
How many places in or around New York City do you guys supply ice to now?
Well, we have about 25 like weekly clients, bars and restaurants that are on a regular ordering basis with us. We deliver once or twice a week to them, and they integrate our product into their regular offerings. In addition to that, we do a tremendous amount of event work. We do, you know, anywhere from 1 to 5 special events a week, which is great. We've had a long working relationship with a number of different brands, and that's where, you know, we really stretch our production capacity to its fullest or beyond it, really, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you guys gotten into any of the sculpting stuff yourself?
Like, yeah, man. It's like, you know, they're just cubes, 2 inches cube, but it's, you know, it's a sculpture as far as I'm concerned. It's sort of like a contemporary art thing, you know, like,
yeah.
Just make like hundreds of them at a time, and, you know.
Nice,
but they're cheap, man. It's only 50 cents. No, I don't. We don't really do a lot of sculpture ourselves. You know, we've gotten into some more fancy stuff. Like I was actually just talking to your buddy a second ago about making these 10-sided, you know, ice cubes. What was it? The decahedron.
Decahedron. Yeah, the Dungeons and Dragon die.
But you know. We've hand cut spheres. We've done diamonds for certain orders and stuff like that. But beyond that, we're not trained to do, you know, the Happy Birthday Mom sculpture or, you know, the giant ice luge shaped like an unmentionable. You know, we've had requests for that kind of stuff
too. I'm sure you have, man.
Yeah. I usually outsource that to somebody else. Yeah.
That's cool. I mean, I was just thinking, you guys must have like a pretty. Since you got into this, you probably have like a whole network of like ice sculptors and people that you can like turn to, right?
I know some weird people, man. I'll be honest. I know a lot of weird people that I never thought I would know. But yeah, I know a lot of ice mongers, ice sculptors, you know, dry ice purveyors, you know, custom bandsaw blade guys. Like, you know, just also the people that you never think that you're going to have a guy for. You know, it's like, oh, but I got a guy for your bandsaw, you know? It's like, so, you know, that's kind of one of the fun parts of, you know, the utter slavery and hell of starting your own business is, like, discovering all these things that you need that you didn't know you need and then trying to find it from all the people that supply it, and it's pretty cool. You get to see a lot of the city that you wouldn't ever experience otherwise.
Right.
You
know? So, like, with these Kleinbell machines, these freezers, how big are these blocks that you can freeze?
40 gallons of water go into each reservoir, and there's 2 in each machine. And each machine yields a 300-pound block, so 2 of them, per harvest, is what we call harvesting the machine. And those measure 40 inches long by 20 inches wide by 10 inches high at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. That's a big chunk of ice, man.
Yeah, man.
We're going to need a bigger glass.
Yeah. You don't want to drop it on your foot or, you know, do anything like that.
Or at all.
Yeah, you really don't. Or try to lift it. It's
How do you transport those, like, as the full blocks?
They don't have to go very far, luckily. You know, you got to use a hoist to get them out of the machine. So there's a – we use, like, an engine hoist, and we lift them
like
up.
A cherry picker kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and then basically we set them down onto a rolling prep table and then wheel them over to the cutting area.
And then you take them down to just whatever size you need.
Yeah, all over the place, whatever, you know. I mean, our, you know, our most common product is a 2-inch cube.
Right.
You know, we sell those by the bagful, you know.
Yeah, a lot of bars use those around town.
Yeah, they do. And then, but we give options because, you know, there's the two biggest challenges we've come across are, A, that our product is about the most highly perishable product out there, you know, 10 minutes out of a freezer and it's done.
Yeah.
So that's really challenging. But, you know, the other main challenge is sort of trying to get people's head into this paradigm shift of, like, paying, like, of factoring ice actually into their drink cost.
Of your cocktail, you know? Yeah.
So we give different options because some people are, you know, some people are like, whatever, 50 cents a cube, no problem. That's not a big deal. Other people are smaller businesses, smaller bars, and it's like, wow, well, that could really hurt us. But we really need to have this. So we do sell larger, like, slabs and blocks and stuff like that that people can cut up themselves. And they can also display it behind the bar and, you know, integrate it into whatever theater aspect of their service program, you know. So we sell a lot of cubes. We sell the Collins Spears and then... You know, we sell different sizes of slabs and blocks.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of other, like, you know, custom stuff if somebody wants it, you know.
I mean, I remember Aaron Polsky and I used some really long, like, I think they were 8-inch by 8-inch, like, logs for one of our Cripple Creek shows.
Oh, that was that one at Webster Hall, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, that was cool. Fun. Just, like, tearing apart and, like, tearing at these giant... They were really hard to take apart, though, if you don't have the right tools.
Yeah, you know, cutting ice, like anything, requires the right tools and a little bit of training and practice, you know. It's something that once you... It takes a little while to sort of to develop a relationship with the ice to the point where you can make it do what you want it to do. You know, and myself and my staff, we've gotten pretty far with that, where we can take a block of ice and break it down into, you know, not perfect 2-inch cubes or perfect size shapes, but pretty consistently sized shapes in a pretty rapid manner. But that's something that we were doing at Dutch Kills before 100 weight even existed, you know.
You're just using hand saws, right?
Yeah, a little pistol grip hand saw, and then a hammer and chisel to sort of pop out the blocks.
I think there is something, like, extremely theatrical about it, you know, like having a big chunk of ice behind the bar and just taking it down, you know. It really, it adds to a certain, like, kind of craft vibe, you know, to the bar. It's like, you thought about, you know, the glassware you're going to order, you thought about the ingredients going in the cocktail, and it's like, all right, well, we're going to make this too, you know.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, and that theater aspect is, you know, obviously been a huge part of this, like, sort of cocktail renaissance that's putting food on all of our plates, you know what I mean? It's always been sort of my theory that, you know, the speakeasy, like, you know, faux speakeasy movement is like, oh, you walk down a dark alleyway and you get to the unmarked door and then you whisper the password and some guy with a handlebar mustache and a bow tie, like, you know, starts cutting up a big ice cube and, you know, sets it in front of you. And that was something that was really necessary to get people to actually drink well-made drinks.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
You think it's like kind of... unnecessary now. It was like part of, like, ushering that into the whole situation, right?
Yeah, I think, I mean, without getting into too, like, you know, critical territory here, for myself personally, I think that aspect of the movement is sort of behind us at this point. You know, that it doesn't have the same appeal that it did back in the day.
Right.
You know, like with Milk and Honey, Little Branch, like PDT. It's like, oh, you go through a phone booth, you know. Like,
yeah.
I think that aspect doesn't... It's, at this point, enough people went through that with us as our guests and our consumers that now they're just acclimated to drinking good drinks, and they just demand good drinks
wherever
in whatever environment. Yeah, and totally. Sometimes they don't feel like they want to go into, you know, 1920s vibe or whatever.
Totally.
You know, so I think that what I've been seeing, and I think it's sort of the natural progression of this whole thing, is that, you know, more and more bars are starting to open up that are just kind of like regular environment bars that are serving a higher level of drinks.
Dude, and that's where I want to hang out, you know?
Yeah, me too. And but I think that, you know, we've, for better or for worse, we've sort of made it so that, you know, you have to pay attention to the ice. That's it. So you have to make a choice about what ice you're going to use.
Yeah.
Which, that's a different thing. Like, you know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, you didn't have to make a choice about it because there was no choice. I mean, you know, the choice was cold draft or, you know, some
Hoshizaki or
exactly, some chippy ice, you know, and that was it. And it wasn't something that you had to make decisions about as a bar owner or like a head bartender or something like that. And now it's like, well, what's up? What, you know, what ice are you going to put in the glass? Like, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
People pay attention to it.
Absolutely. Let's take a quick break.
Yeah.
And when we get back, we'll continue talking with Zach about ice and cocktails and whatever kind of crazy 24 hours he just had. Back in a moment.
This one's called Jump Rope by the Gingerlees. This is Heritage Radio Network.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
And we're back. You're listening to The Speakeasy. And in the studio today, I've got my buddy Zach Gelinal Rubin.
Hi, everybody.
And we've just been talking about 100 Weight, this awesome ice company out of Queens, New York. And about how, you know, like we've definitely like shifted in a very positive direction as far as like the attention to detail with every bit of what goes into the glass and around it. But right before we went on air, and I'm very intrigued, Zach just told me, he's like, man, it's been a really weird 24 hours getting here. So what happened, man? I'm intrigued.
Well, I was wondering how, you know, coherent I would even be because I haven't actually slept much in the last 24 hours. I stole about an hour nap before I came down here, but let's see. 24 hours ago, I was stuck in traffic driving out to New Jersey to see my ma, and like I went and visited with my mom, ate some ramen, and like she signed over the title to her car to me. My mom gave me her old car, which was pretty great.
Yeah, actually. Yeah, man.
And then I drove back into the city, and then I got stuck in traffic again. And then I had an engagement with these women that I know who are customers at Dutch Kills that want to do this like video series and about like, I don't know, like making Valentine's Day like film about making cocktails with aphrodisiacs in it. And I was like, okay. So we went out to dinner, and then straight from there, I had to go take care of some things in the ice shop. So I was just like running back and forth, and I went there and I was handling a bunch of business, and I drank a couple cocktails at Dutch Kills. And I just got inspired to ask my buddy Abraham Hawkins, who was actually a guest on the show at one point, to go to the movies with me. So we went to Times Square at like 12:30 and saw Nightcrawler, which is a pretty pretty intense flick. And then, you know, I got home, and basically my thing was I needed to be up really up super early this morning. And I started watching Miami Vice when I got home, just like episodes of Miami Vice. And then all of a sudden it was like late, really late. And I was like, man, I can't go to sleep now because I might sleep through. So I got on the train and I went up to the Apollo Theater and I sat in front of the box office from 7:30 this morning for 2.5 hours and managed to land myself the front row center 2 tickets of the 8 remaining tickets to the D'Angelo concert, which is coming up. Yeah.
Dude.
So I'm gassed up right now. I'm super fired up. You know, D'Angelo's been my favorite musician for, you know, since I was a squirt, and this is pretty exciting for me.
Yeah, because his new album just came out recently, and you guys, it's on constant repeat at Attaboy.
Yeah, it's like the 2 a.m. record. At okay. Yeah, that's
when I show up.
That's Ricey's, like, thing, you know, Andrew Rice. He's like, yeah, 2 a.m., mate, 2 a.m. And then, you know, lo and behold, every 2 a.m. you hear that, the beginning of that record. It's a great record. I'm super excited about it. It's really fulfilling to me, and to see him play at the Apollo, which is kind of where he, like, sort of got his, like, little start doing amateur night there in the early 90s. I think it's going to be a really historic show.
That's awesome,
so
man.
I'm fired up. And now I have to go and try to squeeze in a little bit of sleep because I'm taking my 100-weight staff out for our, like, holiday dinner tonight at M. Wells. So I think I'm going to get stuffed up.
Nice. Yeah. Say hi to Chef Jeff for me.
What's that?
Say hi to Chef Jeff for me.
Yeah, I will, man. He prepared a pretty incredible menu for us, and it's going to be good stuff.
That place rules, man.
Yeah, big time.
Just, like, pull a live trout out of the water.
Chop.
Yeah. Place is awesome. Yeah. Dude, I mean, like, yeah, it's funny because, like, I feel like the only time I get to go to Attaboy, it's always, like, usually around 2 in the morning, and that album's always played, and you guys are always, you know, it made me think about that earlier when you were talking about ushering in the cocktail bar thing, and, like, the kind of, like, speakeasy thing with the vests and ties and curly mustaches and arm garters and whatnot. It's, like, it's funny to me because, like, in Attaboy, there's definitely, like, kind of a uniform there, but it consists of, like, wife beaters and, like, Hawaiian shirts.
Yeah.
And, like, gold chains.
As much exposed chest hair as possible, yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty, it's always nice to see you and lots of our other great friends. And that's one of the great things I love about that bar is that, you know, the commitment to stay open till 4 a.m. 7 days a week as a high-end or whatever you want to call it, cocktail bar. Because we catch all of the industry at, like, it's like there's a wave, like, every hour. It's like those who get off at midnight come in at, like, 12:30. Yeah. Then it's like it just keeps going until 3:30.
Yeah.
People come in after work. And but, you know, much like a great band who's, like, gets really warmed up, like, 2 a.m. is, I feel like, the time that we're, like, really in the pocket.
Yeah. There.
Like, that bar is just, like, lubricated and moving. I mean, for lack of better words. But, you know, the vibe is, like, you know, really on, you know, on high. So it's always a good time to see Damon walk through the door.
Yeah. Dude, yeah, it's funny. I feel like there are, like, 2 main places in the city that are like that. It's, like, Extra Fancy and Attaboy.
Oh, yeah.
It's, like, super industry hang, you know?
Yeah, Extra Fancy is a pretty classic joint for that.
Yeah, and you just, like, end up seeing, like, the entire industry, like, in one night.
Yeah.
It's amazing, man. Yeah. It's really, I don't know, like, how you do that, how you cultivate that kind of vibe that brings, maybe it is, like, well, I know one factor is being open till 4. So you can actually get the people who don't work till, you know, 3 or 2 in the morning, you know. And no, it's just, like, it's always a fun environment. The thing is, like, even back when it was Milk and Honey and there was, like, 4 bar seats, I mean, it wasn't the same kind of vibe, clearly, but it was very welcoming still. And it's like you took that and, you know, expanded the bar and just kind of, like, opened it up more, you know. It used to be hard to get in there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I know. And even as a member of the family, so to speak, you know, I'm through and through a Sasha bartender. You know, I came up under that tutelage, and most of my work has been in, you know, that umbrella. I never really went to Milk and Honey that much. Attaboy, they really changed it into the bar for me. You know what I mean? When they reopened that way. Milk and Honey, I just always felt like, yo, I'm going to break something in here. Like, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to make a loud noise and everyone's going to go and like look up, you know. So really the only times I ever went there was like, you know, if I happened to be like a block away and by myself, I would stop in and have a quick one. Or if I was on a hot date, you know, that was like the secret weapon. Milk and he's like, oh, right here. Wait, right where? Like, right here, through this door. Like, wait, where are you taking me? And then that whole, like, oh, wow,
yeah,
type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So that was a couple times. Not very many times, you know? Don't give me that look, Damien. It was just a handful of times.
I think we've all been there, you know?
I mean, you'd be dumb not to take a date there.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
It's like, it's made for that, but Attaboy is a way more like social place.
Yeah.
Go in there and meet people you don't know and talk to the people sitting next to you and, you know, let your hair down a little bit more.
Totally.
Yeah. And that's more my personal vibe. That's just the way I am. I mean, when I go out to a bar, I don't want to feel
that's what you
stuffy.
Want to like be able to expect when you go into a bar. You
yeah.
know? Yeah. Because you're not there to like, I mean, I don't go to bars to like sit there and be quiet and like feel nervous about, like you said, like breaking something. You know, I go to, you know, get away from work, even though I love what I do, for which is why I go to another bar.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know what, I don't have to wash these dishes.
Right.
It's like, yeah. So plus I think food and drink just tastes better when someone else makes them for you anyway.
Absolutely, man. There's service is a huge part of it. Just being served something is great, you know.
It's totally like, and it's it has really changed the dynamic. I think the same thing about Dutch Kills, man, because even Dutch Kills, like, I almost killed some bros in there last time I was there.
Really?
Yeah, they were.
Wait,
like,
what happened? Hold on. Back it up.
Yeah, there was like four dude bros, and they kept bumping into me, and my date.
You're bumping into my drink here, guy.
Yeah, and like, someone said something kind of snarky to me, and I was just like, all right, we just got to get out of here.
Yeah. Oh, man. Bummer.
No, it's totally cool.
I mean,
because that was so isolated.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it wasn't the last time I was there. It was like a few times back, and all it made me want to do was just go back there.
Yeah, yeah.
So I could run into those guys again.
That's such a crazy bar, man. I love it. I mean, it's been my lifeblood. You know, that's where I started in this business, and I've been working there since the day we swung the doors, May 1st of 2009. And myself and Hawkins Abraham are the only two like surviving members from the original staff.
Oh, wow.
And so it's really my home bar, you know, and it's such a weird thing because I didn't really have any background in Queens, although now I live there and I run a business there and I know the borough a lot better now, especially in the immediate surroundings of Dutch Kills. But you get a really different clientele there, man, because, you know, it's like, you know, it's a lot of locals, you know, and it's been in such an incredible process sort of introducing this like sort of downtown Manhattan and Brooklyn type of like product or service to a place where it's just there was no precedent. And now you've got these guys who 3 years ago would only drink vodka Red Bull.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they've never gone outside of Astoria in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're in there calling for these crazy classic drinks by name. And you know, like,
it's great, man.
Yeah. It's cool. And it's been a lot of fun, and you know, had a lot of rewarding relationships with a lot of people there that I otherwise might not have, you know, been exposed to. So in many ways, I actually like really prefer it, you know, to like you know, Dutch Kills on a Friday night is a much cooler place, full of a lot more down to earth people than, you know, any of your big heavy hitting downtown bars. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, I think that it's, you know, it's. It just shows like where we're at now, you know, like where we've come to, you know.
Yeah,
like,
with bringing these cocktails to the common man.
Yeah, and it's great too. It's like, you know, I would much rather prefer that instead of like, I remember like when we opened Prime Meats, we would get like neighborhood people who like didn't necessarily like have their classic drink or know much about them, and it was great because they were still open to the education.
Yeah.
So we either had that or like extreme cocktail nerds who were playing like Stump the Bartender every round, you know?
Right.
And now it's like, after a while, it's like, and it's not just because the place has survived these years, it's like the clientele has changed, you know, and the expectations have changed. The expectations from the customer and for the customer, like, have changed. Because like for us, like we've gotten a chance to really like put the word out about these cocktails.
Yeah,
and now
put
like
people onto it. Turn around, yeah.
So like for us, it's like, all right, well, we've done our job. Like, people know about these cocktails.
Yeah.
We don't have to deal with like, you know, the vodka Red Bull orders.
I mean, you
know?
Still do.
Yeah,
but, you know, it's been a very, you know, that's one of the really nicest and like most humbling like experiences as in this trade, I think, is to for you to really learn the art of, like, weaning someone off of their normal habits and introducing them into something new, it's a very delicate blend of humility and soothingness and, like, trickery to get people into, like, what they are about to get into that they didn't think they ever would get into. It's like one of the classic things is, like, you know, the sort of macho guy who doesn't want to drink out of a stemmed coupe because he thinks it's effeminate, you know, and to, you know, it's a really delicate balance because you can't condescend somebody and be like, well, and if they don't know about it and they're not, like, hip to the cool shit that you're hip to, and you scoff at them about that, then, like, you lost a customer and you played yourself because, like, what are we, man? We're fucking bartenders. We're the scum of the earth. Yeah. You know what I mean? So how can we be scoffing at anybody else? So it's always been a really fun process to sort of, like, that dance to, like, try to, you know, get somebody to do something that they wouldn't normally do. And
I liken it to, like listening to music and turning someone on to new music.
Right.
You're not telling them that their music sucks, even though they're listening to the same song on repeat.
Right.
You're just trying to expand their musical collection, you know? It's like the same thing with cocktails. It's like, that's cool, man. If you like this, you should definitely check this drink out. You know, I think that's the way to do it, you know? And I think in the very beginning when the cocktail renaissance came around, it was like, there wasn't that nicety, you know, that we expect to have nowadays, you know? It was more like, you have to drink in aviation. You can't.
Right.
Your drink sucks. You're drinking this.
Yeah.
You know, like, get them in the front door first and, like, let them experience, like, what they want to experience. Get them into the... Most times people walk into a place, they just want to have their comfort blanket, you know? They want to have the thing that they know, that they're constant. And then once they're comfortable in the new environment, then they can try something. You know, like, I typically, like, go for the weird shit, but, like, it's stuff that I've never seen before. But, you know, there's only a few of us, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
But I think it's great, man. Like, you actually... you've helped me out a lot in the past with not only ice and drinks at your bar, but getting reservations for places at, like, M.Well Steakhouse.
Oh, yeah. So, I sent you over there that one time.
Yeah. With a boomerang.
With a boomerang, yeah.
So I appreciate that. You've always been the greatest, man. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Hey, of course.
And please come back anytime you'd like.
No doubt, man. We'll do it again.
Yeah, and have a happy holiday party with your staff tonight.
Oh, man. It's going to be a fucking pig out. Oof. I'm psyched.
Nice. Well, check out 100 Weight. Check out Dutch Kills, of course, if you haven't been. And, of course, Attaboy. Zach is always working. So the chances you run into him are very, very good.
Yeah.
All right. That's it for the Speakeasy this week. Thanks again, Zach.
All right.
We'll
take
talk
care.
Next week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.